Or you can pass in inputs. I'm going to talk about that in a while. And so these are the blocks. These are the errors we put on blocks that you I think you don't find in many languages. And there's a kind of a slight tweak that if it has these this vertical ellipsis, that also means that you can drop a list on it. That you can drop something on it that will then give you an aggregation of the data in that list. One example would be here when we have the plus block. I can say 3 plus 4. I can see 3 plus 4 plus 6, and it works. But it can also get here the numbers from 1 to 10. And if I put them on here, the block morphs into the sum block, and I can get the sum of that list. So it's basically a way to maybe overload blocks and primitives with functionality to make it more expressive, but also to reduce the number of blocks in the palette, because that's something that we hear a lot. You know, it's great to have something that's discoverable, so you can check through the menus to see what's there. But it's also a plight, because you've got to go through all the menus to find what you want. So there's this trade-off between giving you expressive power and overloading your mind with all the choices that you have to make. So it's a powerful feature, variadic blocks. And there are these, they're kind of all over in Snap with these indications of sometimes we don't want you to be able to do aggregations, because they're kind of also user interface things, like when you make a list, like this block that actually gives you a new list, it doesn't make sense to drop a list on there to wrap it into a list. So instead, if you want to have a list of the numbers from 1 to 10, this is what you want, but it doesn't make sense to make a list of those numbers. So these are variadic blocks, kind of the first way of power blocks that we had in Snap. And they're quite useful, because they let us basically specify all our operators, all our infix operators, to be variadic, so we can easily chain things like greater than or and or into these chains. And they also let us kind of reduce our conditionals to just really one block, and it also serves sort of as a switch statement, because we can expand them, and we just need this one block to do things that otherwise would have to be nested. Like often when you see these block-based languages, you see very deeply nested if-else structures, and kind of it's easier to mentally talk about and digest things that are just one level of nesting. And the second part is meta blocks. And meta blocks kind of is maybe the thing that basically goes into this blocks-oriented paradigm. Meta blocks is in Snap are rings. We have rings all kind of all over. Here are blocks that have rings on them, and these are the higher order functions. So we can map the numbers 1 to 10, and we can say, okay, we want this to be, you know, times 2, and the ring basically is a lambda structure, and it then lets us very easily transform these things. And these are all the higher order functions like that we have. For example, we could also say keep, which is a filter way. And if we keep the numbers 1 to 10, we can pass in a predicate, for example, that would select all the ones that are divisible by 3. And so rings are a very powerful way to avoid loops and to just use high-order functions. And rings is, in a way, a meta structure, because really what meta blocks do, what these rings that you do, they let you access blocks, either to call them, as I've just shown you now, or to actually access their properties. And you can change blocks with them, and you can make new blocks with these things. So what we have in Snap is that, for example, now that I have this structure here, I can split it using a ring. Like I can split hello world, I can split that. But if I have, for example, the move and turn script, and I put that into a ring, and if I split that by blocks, I now get a syntax tree. And a syntax tree is something that now lets me think about the syntax, the structure, not in a textual way. And when I have a syntax tree, I can again stitch this together and create new scripts from it. So now I can join it, and I'm again getting the script. So this is a way to dissect and rearrange scripts. And that's kind of going down into the way how we make blocks. Like, for example, I can also programmatically define a new block in Snap using this. So I can define a block here. For example, I could define the block jump, and I can say there should be a height, and then I can define this with this block. Like I can say there should be something like height, and then I could write something in here. For example, I could do a little animation, repeat height. I could say, you know, change Y position by 1, and then I could just duplicate that and change it again by minus 1. Now this would be sort of a block, and then I can say different things, but let me just evaluate this. So if I click on this, I've made a new block here, and I can now let my sprite jump, hopefully. Let's jump by 100. And it sort of does that very slowly. But the way is I can now write scripts that produce other scripts using blocks, something that usually I'd only do in a text-based language. And so this is one idea to think about going meta on blocks themselves rather than, you know, on some other computational concepts. And this was the way to make a new block. Oh, there are some animations in there. And finally, another thing that's going meta is that we can have self-reflection, that I can look at all the blocks in the system or the blocks on my stage to find out and to reason about them. So, for example, I could say I can look at all my scripts in here. Where do I find them? Here. So when I get all my scripts, now these are all the scripts that I have sitting in the scripting area right now. And then I can sort of cycle through them and get their syntax trees and rearrange them and analyze them, which block points to which other block, and basically sort of get a graph structure of my program. And yes, please. Yes, it is included in the list, which is the MyScripts. Yes, the whole thing is, it sort of proves that it actually is live. Yes, if I didn't want to have it in here, I would have it in a different, like, I can also evaluate it in here, to find it again. If I evaluate it in here, it's not there anymore, right? So yes, but if it's in the scripting area where I'm actually evaluating the block, it will be included in the scripts because it's a script. So yes, please.
I work with Lisp.
Yes.
Code all the time, and I'm very curious. I'm looking for what's the difference with what I'm doing. My blocks are within parentheses all the time.
Exactly.
There I have macros and
yes.
Can expand expressions.
Yes. Exactly. So you're saying you work with Lisp, and that's precisely what I've been showing you right now. So there's a question, like, is this something else than from what you've been doing if you've been using things like Smalltalk or Lisp that are self-reflective, that have metaprogramming capabilities? And I'm not sure, which is why there's a question mark. So let me show you one more thing that kind of prompted me to maybe go into that direction, and that is... let me actually make a new project for this. What if blocks were also the domain of what we could program? So we wouldn't just kind of generate new blocks, but what if there were programs that sort of define the properties of a block? And here's a, like, maybe just a little example. I'm going to import a data set of the Titanic, the passengers of the Titanic, and I want to have a block that sort of explores what this is doing. And for the sake of time, I'm just going to import that block now. So this would be it. So there's a drill down block I made. And this now lets me drill down the data set of the Titanic. And I can click on here, and I get... you know, all the fields that are in the data set. So I can say, I want to get all the classes, and it's already selecting a class that's in the data set. And I can see all the classes that are in there, and I can select them. And so now I'm getting all the people in that third class. And if I'm selecting, for example, all the genders, I'm getting male and female. So this isn't really that special, but it seems that I made this block just for the Titanic dataset, because how else would it know which fields to show in that drop-down menu? But the fact is that this drop-down menu is dynamic, so if I take another dataset, for example, the Forbes Billionaires set, and I put the billionaires here, I'm getting, you know, the company sector. And now it's software and other things. So what I'm showing in the block is dynamic, dependent on its inputs. And I think this is something, because you don't need it in Lisp, because you just type it in. But here in blocks, it's sort of a mishmash between an expression and a user interface with affordabilities. And the way I've made this block here, this is something new we've been thinking about, is that in its definition, there are also event blocks that are particular, that deal with user events to this particular block instance. And so I've made this this thing that controls the menu that's shown when the user requests a menu for the column. It actually gets the data, evaluates, and then shows a dynamic rendition of that. And in the right column, where we can set the detail, it does that depending on the selection in the left column. And this is something that I'm quite excited about, because now we're talking about not really building apps, but having the program itself sort of be something that could be an interface to data. And so it's sort of suddenly all this nerdism about, oh, let's do metaprogramming, and oh, wow, like, why didn't it pick up since the 80s? Like, why does everybody think it's hard, and it is something that, like, meta is crazy? Suddenly it seems like not such a bad idea anymore. So it might actually make sense to do this. And maybe blocks could be something that are more than just a modality, especially if they're alive. It could be something that could actually help us. And I mean, this example is just something that I've shown you with data, but I'm also imagining, like, in the other dev rooms here in FOSDEM Junior, we're playing a lot with robots. Now, if you're talking about, if you think about hardware, like one robot has this set of pins or this set of features, having things that dynamically interact with that and show you and give you the choices and maybe default values could be something that maybe, and that's kind of the last proposition I want to make, that maybe gives us a new tangent for programming, where it's not just about writing static code, but where it's actually kind of more of a language between us or and between the appliances we use. And in that, maybe there could be something not just blocks-based programming, but actually block-oriented programming. And the last thing is hyperblocks. I've shown that yesterday in the keynote, which is where we can basically put any vectors, matrices, kind of any dimension. It's essentially array-based programming that's built into the blocks, which also reduces the number of blocks and makes it easier to do more with fewer blocks because it does what you think it does. And that's really the question, more of a question I want to pose. Could there be something like a place for visual programming? This is what I wanted to show, and we've already had some great questions or remarks, and I'd be very interested about yours. Yes, please. That's a great point. You said that, you know, the visual metaphors could be a base for game engines and things where, and you also expressed that maybe it could be something where the engine could be written in itself, kind of in this way. This is also something that we've been playing with, for example, like all the blocks that you have in the palette here that are kind of primitives. You can actually edit them. Like if I go to the move block, I can see how this is done. So this is the actual primitive, and you can see it calls a primitive, but there's fallback code. I can turn off the primitive, and then it does this. So actually, large parts of this is written in itself, and you can see, for example, how things like the repeat loop is actually sort of written in itself recursively. And this is precisely the point. Like usually when we talk about these things, it's like, yeah, you're nerds. You just like doing things in itself. But there is this openness behind this. If you can look at things without Googling them and the things tell you or give you insights of their internal state of how they're made, and if you drill down, you see something that you're familiar with. We hope that's kind of more inviting for you to engage with, you know, more powerful ideas than just to take it as God-given. Yeah. Yes, please.
So, thank you. progression from the basic of block programming or block building. And I think that, and if that's perhaps my question, is that also your intention, that you want to have some kind of progression from the basics with the hyperblocks and the drilling now? Is that also to have the ability to look into more activities?
Do we want to have a progression? Absolutely, we do want to have a progression. The progression that we're after is that of intellectual concepts. Not so much of going from blocks to text, because that is just a different modality of expressing things, although the lesbians amongst you might be pleased to see that we have an internal encoding that has that kind of is Lisp-like. But the idea, what we're thinking about is that, you know, if you're curious, you should be able to explore things and take things apart and rearrange things and then learn about how this is done. So it's okay to have a fence, to have a barrier, and you should